PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, once again, is a titan in the putter game. His name is Sean Toulon. We all love him. We're just glad to have him on. Sean, great to see you, buddy.
Nice to see you too, Dan. How are you?
Good. I've got like a 10-minute intro for you if you really want it, but I feel like you're not that kind of guy.
No, we're all good. Let's talk. Let's talk clubs, putters, whatever you like.
Well, it's been a minute since you've been on the show, and I know things move quickly in your industry, and especially with how things are ramping up for you guys. Can you give folks an idea what Toulon's been up to for the last few months, and then we'll get into 2025?
Yep. I would say, number one, we just put the bow on our first full year of 24 with our 24 collection and then all the small batch stuff that we did. And we had an awesome year. So, which was really, you know, we felt good about our products, Dan, and, you know, we felt like we had, we liked our position, we liked our designs, but, you know, you never really know how things are going to turn out until, you know, you get in there and get a little dirty and muddy and see what happens. But, first year, I think we did really, really nicely. Very proud of the team. I think what we focused on two things, and I mean, this is as fundamental as you could imagine it could be, right? Let's make the very, very best products that we know how to make and obsess over that, and then obsess over the customer experience and take better care of our customers than we think anybody could or does. So spoil the customer, give them an unbelievable product. And, you know, it's kind of a stupid, simple formula, but it's the right one.
I think the Toulon story is pretty interesting because you have this sort of boutique model, but then you have this like hyper boutique model on top of it that really takes it to the next level. I know you're a guy that loves to tinker, and certainly with different metals. You know, I've seen what your desk looks like most of the time, so I have a good idea there. But I feel like this is your wheelhouse, the opportunity to really roll out the red carpet for anyone who wants to engage with the brand, but also provide people the opportunity to get something in their hands as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So I think you're referring, one, to the hyper boutique being the small batch stuff. And the small batch products for us, it's the ultimate sort of creative sandbox for us, right? And you know, we don't make very many of them. And thankfully, I wouldn't say that, you know, I love everyone that we've done so far. And some resonate more than others to golfers, but they all resonate the same way to us. But it allows us to try things that you really couldn't try probably in full-scale production. So we can mess around with mill patterns, and we can experiment with metals and finishes and shapes and, you know, little things, right? And a lot of those ideas really do change the way we think and look at collection putters, right? And you'll see a lot of that when we talk about 25 and the collection putters that we have. A lot of that has been inspired by things that we learned from doing small batch. So it's a really cool part of our business. It requires a lot of time and energy and mental resources of everybody, but especially Tony. But it really puts our brand into the place where, you know, we'd like to have a stronghold.
Yeah, I want to go under the hood of that a little bit because I think it's really interesting. I've known you for a long time now, and I know you're a guy that likes to get together and break bread and spend time with the people that matter to you. I think that's a pretty big storyline of your life. Mm-hmm. When it comes to creating this sort of multitude of option small batch style thing, is it very much that vibe when you get down to it from the creation process? You get together, you start to just throw things at at the wall, write things down on napkins, and then just see what happens there. Can you give people an idea of how you get to these things, where you start talking things like tuna and watch material, like that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I think there's really two parts of the small batch. One is creating the product itself. And then the other one is really understanding the geographic connection that product is going to have. So for instance, tomorrow, this is, so I've just timestamped our conversation. Tomorrow we launch Small Batch Scottsdale. And that's a really cool product because of one, I think the design of the putter is amazing. Kind of a cool little sort of a ear-shaped mid mallet with a H1 neck, which you typically don't see those things come together. But we got inspired by all things Scottsdale, which is obviously the desert, the history of it being part of the Wild Wild West, Frank Lloyd Wright and all the Frank Lloyd Wright Taliesin inspired architecture and all of these things coming together. And then we try to get it all to sort of coagulate into a product that really resonates with people. So part of the, throwing ideas against the wall is the product itself. And then the other part of it is how we create meaningful stories behind it, right? And that really comes to life in the ways we might choose a mill pattern or certainly the graphics and the story behind the graphics and all that stuff. And those are amazing sessions to be in. And they're not all smiles. Somebody can get pretty, me or Tony or press, anybody can get pretty fired up about a position that they might have. And sometimes I have a thought and they think it sucks. And sometimes it might. And sometimes they're wrong. So, but it's all good. And we get through it. But that's really, to me, what gets the whole team excited about creating a new product.
That's fun because it's more meaningful, right? Like there is a true level of emotion that goes into that creation. And I have the privilege of seeing some of this stuff maybe a little bit before others do. And my favorite part is seeing the name and guessing what's in it. Think that starts to become more of a hobby of mine, is to see like, okay, what's on their mind right now. And then when I do get into actually seeing the product, it's like, all right, I want to find out why this happens. And you get to start reading. It's like, okay, that really ties in well. And I think Scottsdale is a really fun example because I look at it, I'm like, man, it looks like a saddle to me. I'm just like, yeah. It just the color suits it. Everything connected really well to it. So, it's a lot of fun in that regard, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. We did one last year at the Women's British Open Championship, which was held at St. Andrews, right? So, and that was where we did Toulon and Sons. And our mindset was, what if, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, we had a little storefront right on Link's Way called Toulon and Sons, and we were club makers like the Auchter Loney's or Old Tom Morris, and what would that look like? And what would our storefront look like? And that it's just fun to dream. And then bring it to life in a product. And, we don't make many of them, right? We make 75 of them at the most. And, so people that get them, they're these really kind of cherished little, hopefully eventually heirlooms that they have. And that's a fun thing to be a part of.
Yeah. See, that's the kind of thing that I think people need to hear about from you, the way you dive into that. Because every time we've had a conversation in person or even something like this, it feels like this is a hobby that just happens to make money for you. And that's, I think, what is so fun about it is that there's a real drive to just be a part of something special for you. And it's, a lifetime of obviously success that's gotten you here. But like that to me is it might be one of my favorite parts of the Toulon story, is just exactly how much of a hobby and a component of that exists for you.
Yeah. So, it's not easy starting a company at all, right? And I can tell you, I didn't dream of retiring and working 100 hours a week again, right? Which we all, honestly, we are. Maybe now it's 85, but it's, this is not a part-time job for sure, right? And, but you wouldn't do it. There's no way you would do it or the kids would do it if they didn't love it, right? Because no rational person would do that. You know, I was here at 4:30 this morning, right? But it doesn't feel, it's just what I do and it's what they do, right? And there's just so much love and excitement, and it's like a privilege to be able to do this, that it's seriously, without sounding like a, you know, just a an old saying, it's just, we just love what we do and we're lucky.
That's the way it should be, honestly. Yeah. I think driving that connection is part of what makes the experience so special, and to have the name on the putter like that. I think we should talk 2025. You guys have a lot coming, a lot of new looks coming as well.
Yeah.
But I think there's a centralized theme here that's going to connect everything together, and that's the term soft. I read through the PDF you guys sent me, which obviously looks amazing, but the resounding feedback here is soft. Tell me why that word means so much in 2025 for Toulon.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, when you, with 24, we loved the 24 lineup, right? And we had a really unique finish on that. And, you know, I think overall the shapes of the products, and it was, I'm very proud of what we put out. But one of the really cool things about having this small company, and again, we don't make thousands of anything. We make, you know, 100 of something, or maybe, you know, 200 of something, right? So we don't make a lot of anything, which means we get to also go back and build these orders, right? So when Dan Edwards or Josh or you know, one of your members orders a putter, one of us goes back and builds it, right? So when you're back there looking at the putter that closely, you start to see, we could have done that maybe a little differently. Or what if we did that? And you know, look at a blend of the hosel differently. Or, geez, you know, underneath the bucket of an H1 hosel, maybe that's a little sharper than it could be or should be. So you just get this closeness with the product because it's there every day with you. That, you know, your level of curiosity is always peaked. And, hey, maybe we could do this or that. So as we started going through that, and I would say May or June, the operative word did become soft. So, and for me at first, it was really about just making the product more inviting to touch, you know, and because when you touch, you don't just touch, you touch with your eyes, you touch with your fingers, and but you get this feel. And I want people to be able to take a putter head and touch it and just go, oh my God, that's awesome. That's just, so there's all of this, all of these sensory things that happen that create an emotion of, I got to have this, right? Or, you know, so the operative word for desire for us is lustful. And when you look at it, it's just something that you look at and say, my life will be better if that's in it. So, and soft was really, the thing that we keyed on. And then once we looked at, you know, the finish and all the radii and the chamfers and all of that, that was one part of it. But then the obvious second part of it is, how does it sound and how does it feel? And what could we do there?
I want to rein you in a little bit, because we are definitely going to talk about sound today.
Great.
But I don't want to walk too far away from this conversation without talking about the overall lines that are on the putter. You know, you talked about refinement and this sort of visual refinement. Is the conversation here more about softening edges and creating better flow on a visual?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. And I think, Dan, you've seen the product, and obviously the listeners so far have not. But when you see what we did different with the Las Vegas, I think that's sort of the poster child for softer, right? Because you'll remember the that in the back flange, That used to be a straight bar there, right? And now it's more curved. Mm. And we did that for a couple of different reasons. It did help us create a different sound and different feel, which we wanted to on that product. But a curved surface is certainly emotionally much different than just a straight line across the back. So then when you look at that, we crown the top a little bit. And, you know, so there's a, when you change one thing to make the whole package sort of flow visually, you end up changing everything, right? And and that's what we did. And ultimately, even if these changes are very, very small, if you change three or four things in a tiny way, you'll see it. A golfer will see it, right? And that's really what we were after. I think Vegas is probably the shining example of that.
Yeah, this is getting released after 2025 drops, so they will have seen it and they'll be able to refer to it as it's happening. I think that's worth mentioning.
Good.
One thing that I think is interesting about this decision is from a purely precision concept, from a boutique putter concept, I look at a lot of newer concepts that come out and they usually have really sharp lines, which to me is a bit of a turnoff.
Yeah.
I think that there is a level of, I don't even know if I want to say precision, but that rolled edge almost feels like there's that added component of refinement, I think you could say, to the overall shape. And I know it's not easy to get there, but I think it's a really important component to make a putter look complete, it finished, if you will.
Yeah, I think what it is, it's the obsession over a detail like that, right? Mm. And I will tell you, if we had to make thousands of them, it would be way more difficult than making hundreds of something, right? So when you look at that top line and see just that tiny little chamfer that's on there, and that chamfer is exactly the same as it is on the back line, and that's part of creating this overall look and finish of completeness, I guess. And that we obsess over that and make sure that every single one is done that way. You know, that's, I think that's what makes our putters different. That's part of, that's a big chunk of it.
So here's what I want to do, because I know you're a guy who doesn't have a putter head far away from you at all times. Yeah. I assume you're within arm's reach of at least a handful of them right now.
Yep.
Unless you happen to be in the bathroom or something and I don't know about it.
I'm in my office and they are right here.
But my question to you is just for a little bit of fun. How many days of your life do you think you've spent holding a putter in your hands?
Every day since I was 12.
But I mean, like, overall time spent either looking at or touching a putter head. What do you think? A year?
way more. I mean, if you just, you know, what is the old adage that to be a subject matter expert, it's 10,000 hours?
Yeah.
Literally. I got at least 5,500 hours last year. So it adds up quick. And that's been a lot of years of that. But I don't know how long it's been, but it's a lot.
Hmm. Well, tell me about the new finish. I think that's an interesting, I believe you called it anthracite or something of that nature.
Yep.
What got you to that finish and why is that important for 2025?
So it was a finish that we did in one of the small batches this year. And it was a really special one for us because it was the introduction of a concept called Toulon and Sons, which is obviously near and dear to my heart. So, and it was just this beautiful, sort of a liquid charcoal. So it was, and it was done on kind of a pintail blade that would be sort of shaped like a Santa Monica, but with a snub nose and a pintail. It's just cool. That putter is just awesome. But what I liked so much about the finish is it was really deep. So the depth of the luster was awesome. Some of that is the 904L material. But it really showed off all of the beautiful details of the slow milling process that we use. And other finishes don't do it as much. Black, I love. but it starts to hide some of it a little bit more. And there were just little things that you could see, shadows and things like that, which obviously with black, the shadow would just blend into the rest of it. So you got to see different parts of the putter that you actually spent the time to change a radius here or a chamfer there, or, you know, soften this or tweak here or there. And that part of the finish we just loved. And then visually, it's just very striking.
Yeah, I think one of the things I'm most curious about, because it's something you've used in the past, is how much does the impact of the finish change switching metals? Is it notable or is it subtle?
I'd say subtle. Okay. I'd say subtle. 904 just polishes so beautifully, and machines with a sort of a level, you have to go really slow because the material is difficult to mill. And we have a material change for this year into a 304, which you can mill a little bit faster. But that has some bearing on it, but I would say, you know, it's 10%, right? Or something like that. So it would be pennies or dimes, not dollars, right? So, but it's all part of the process.
Okay. Well, let's walk right into 304 then. Why do you land on that steel? I think you take your metal very seriously.
Yeah.
I can't imagine making a switch or focusing on a particular metal as an easy choice.
Yeah.
Why was 304 the one you landed on?
It's a hair softer, for one. So that was something that we were really interested in. And a lot of that has to do with the way our lineup is constructed this year, which is very, very mallet centric, which I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that. But so that's part of it. And then really doesn't matter much at this point for the 25 collection, but 304. So I'm going to kind of tip our hand a little bit. 304 is a material that welds beautifully. So you can guess that potentially the garage is not that far away.
Okay. That's a big piece of the puzzle. I mean, that's a question I've always had for you. Wow. Okay. What was the, I can't believe I can't remember. What was the metal you used for 24?
303.
It was 303. Okay. Yeah. I didn't want to say it out there just to be a goof, but
yeah, no, that's okay. So it not a big change. These are tweaks, right? But just little bits here and a little bit there, like I said, three or four changes, and all of a sudden you do have a product that's quite unique and quite different.
Okay. And one of the questions I've always had is, I know there's a durability conversation in play every time I ask this question to anyone who talks about putters or knows anything about putters.
Yeah.
But I mean, carbon steel has always been a pretty relevant piece of the conversation, especially when you look back at like the 2000s or so. Everyone was using it because of the profile it had. It was soft. It was different. And then there's this shift into stainless because obviously people treat their putters like garbage and no one wants a rusty putter. So tell me about the carbon steel component. Do you ever look at that as an option, and why do most people shy away from it?
Well, they shy away from it for exactly what you said, that if you don't take care of it, it won't take care of you very well, right? Mm. And it's interesting. People seem to have adopted raw and rusty wedges, but not so much in putters, right? So we launched this year a carbon proto in a new blade called Hollywood and also in Las Vegas. And we did those in December and they sold out immediately. But we plated them, which is also not easy to do, especially on bigger mallets. It's actually not that easy to do on a blade either, to get the level of consistency of the finish that you really want. But the sound and feel of carbon is, there's a real romance to it. To your point, you know, it brings me back to, you know, the early 1990s when Scotty Cameron, you know, was back and Tad Moore and those guys were doing beautiful carbon putters. That's, I think it's really cool. So, we did those and we didn't like them. We loved them. So my guess is it won't be the only time we ever do it.
So why plate them then? Does that not have an impact on the overall sound profile if you plate
it? It can, yeah. But it's, you know, you basically turn it into a beautiful forged plated iron, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I no offense to Ping, but I'd rather hit a Mizuno.
Well, yeah, your words and mine. Let's be clear. That's interesting. The metal conversation is always a fun one, and I'm curious about 304 as it is softer and this sort of continuation of the conversation you've had. I'm going to let you go into sound now because I think it's a big part of the story, but I want to direct that into it by asking purely about the milling. We've had wonderful discussions in the past, Sean, about the style of your milling patterns, especially early Toulon release stuff where you're directing sound waves to people's ears and, you know, going into the weeds that I would have never thought to go into just purely based on what you wanted people to hear.
Yeah.
The milling for 25 is gorgeous. I mean, it's awesome, but how much of that plays into the sound profile?
Huge, really a big part of it. So as we were, you know, going through the whole thing and our word that we landed on first visually, and then, you know, what are the other components of creating soft sound is a huge part of it. So get a little bit of that with the material. I'm not positive if we blindfolded people. I actually am positive 303 and 304 that there's enough of a difference there. It's slightly softer, but that mill pattern is definitely deeper and it's definitely a little bit more coarse. And so if you go back to our deep diamond mill days, you know, it is about channeling vibration, which is sound and which is what creates feel to a golfer. Less of it getting to your ears, more of it getting dissipated out into the universe. It's definitely going to feel softer. And when we were putting this line together and it was going to be much more mallet centric, we felt like that was something we really needed to do. Because while we liked what we did in 24, we felt like we could make the putters feel better. And I think we did.
Okay. How many different milling patterns did you experiment with? I know that small batch is a bit of like an experimental component. We've seen a lot of different milled finishes there, but I mean, this one lands really, really nicely for me, not just from a visual perspective, mm-hmm. but I mean, is this the one you call Big Tuna?
This one is Deep Tuna.
Deep Tuna. Okay.
Yeah. So the actual tuna similar, part yeah. of it is, it's a cute little tuna. It's a little guy.
Yeah.
Okay. We do the bigger ones, which are more, probably a little bit more artistically driven than they are performance driven. But this one definitely was about creating a softer sound and feel.
Okay. So this deeper tuna, the intent of that to be there is purely for not aesthetics, but actually to drive vibration into a different component.
Yep, exactly. We happen to love the way it looks. So that's cool. Got to check two boxes, but it was really driven by, can we take the sound down a little bit? And you know, you saw, I mean, last year, 80% of what we sold were mallets. And then as we created more mallet shapes, every one of those is different and creates a different kind of a frequency profile from impact, which, you know, so even if you change the neck a little bit, you change that, right? So this was a way for us to move sort of en masse to a softer sound and feel. And then from there, we just played with face thickness to kind of get it dialed in. But I would say we seriously considered probably 10 different patterns before we landed on this one.
Hmm. There's been an interesting trend in what people desire in the industry. I mean, I remember back when the milling was so tight that it was just a visual thing. Like the next level up would have been like a fully flush face, you know what I mean? Like
right,
untouched. I always loved that phase of stainless putters. And then they moved into a deeper mill and some of the more common heads, and I was totally out on it because it just, it killed all that audible feedback I got.
Yep.
But there's also a massive group of golfers who play some kind of insert in their putter that promotes a very, very different sound than mm-hmm. what I would usually get comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Is it challenging to compete or play against that when you're sharing a similar shape? Or is there an understanding that this presents a slightly more robust profile?
Yeah, you got to pick, you know, so you got to, you've got to decide, do you want to hide it or do you want to really bring it? Do you want to celebrate feedback? Right. We've always opted towards celebrating the feedback because I think it's a really important part for a golfer to control distance. You have to be able to hear it. And if you can't hear it, it gets really difficult for people to control their ball speed.
Well, there's a huge component of the putter discussion right now is on MOI and the amount of forgiveness. And I mean, Mallett certainly started that conversation, but it's shifted a lot based on weight placement, you know, skeleton style shaping, different. We've seen fully aluminum profiles with weights all out in the perimeter. Like there's a lot that's gone on
yep.
to resolve this sort of bad putter issue that a lot of people face. Has that process been surprising for you? Has it kind of gone the way you anticipated? And to cap on that, what does Toulon think about maximizing performance and forgiveness in something like a mallet shape?
Yeah, well, I think it's important. And the our customers that are drawn to the 25 collection is a different customer that's drawn to the small batch, right? So small batch, although I will say probably 70% of the people that buy them play with them, which makes me really happy. But almost everybody who buys a collection putter, it's a gamer, right? So there we are going to be driven a little bit more towards performance, not giving up on the artistic side and the beautiful part of it, because that's really what defines our brand. But we're going to lean into the performance a little bit more there. So I think it's really important. So what we try to do, Dan, is move the CG forward and try to on as far that helps us with ball speed robustness on miss hits. And if we can get the weights all the way to the outside or as much of that and create, at least on some of the mallets, a wider face footprint, our inertia does go up. The key for us is we don't want the CG back. We want the CG moving forward as much as we can so you can have more of a feel for the rotation, right? And the torque profile of a putter, I think is really important. So, and then from there, now we're getting into fitting, I guess, but matching a torque profile of a putter to the torque profile of the player is a really important part of it.
I want to get into the actual shapes of 2025, and yep. I'm sort of scrolling here on my left to try and pick something to talk about, but there's so much going on. I mean, a lot of faces or heads we've seen before and a lot of newcomers to the line. I know you're not a man who's afraid of askew. tell me why it mattered so much to expand on the line.
Just the marketplace has really changed and it's really been driven from tour. That shouldn't be a, oh my God, you know, how did that happen moment? But it used to be, Dan, not that long ago, that 60% of what was sold was blades and 40% was mallets, which happened to be the exact same ratio that was in play on the PGA Tour. And then it swapped. And now last year on the PGA Tour, about 80% of the putters that were in play, a little less than that, but around that directionally, that'll be correct, were mallets. And, you know, in the marketplace, 80% of what sold were mallets. So we felt like we could lean in there and do some things with some shapes that were different, and especially designing different shapes with different hosel profiles, you know, to work on this rotational value or torque profile of a putter that would be different than it might typically be with the mallet. So as soon as TaylorMade did that little slant neck on a spider, that opened, you know, that opened the door for a lot of people to try a mallet that maybe wouldn't on tour. Jason Day, Scotty Scheffler, you know, his is a different neck, but those necks really opened up people's mindset towards, you know, the benefits of a mallet, which is primarily alignment. But it opened up a whole new avenue, really. And we felt we could move our line in that direction pretty substantially, which is what we did.
So the folks a little bit unknowing on that, the how much of that neck is based on presentation and how much is based on toe hang, which sort of references the style of your putting stroke and how it supports it.
Yeah, I'd say it's 100% of both, right? So I mean, really, really important. So if you look at pick a model in our new line, you tell me.
Let's go with Miami.
Okay, Miami. So Miami, you know, typically a putter. So Miami is a larger footprint mallet, one of our larger ones, does have relatively high inertia. But a mallet like that is typically going to be available double bend, right? Mm-hmm. But this one also comes with an H1 neck. And that H1 neck changes the toe hang pretty substantially to, you know, I can't remember exactly offhand, but 20 to 25 degrees of toe hang to it. And that's going to have a very different sort of, you'll feel a release point that will be different and a rotational value or a torque profile that will be quite different than with a double bend. And those mallets typically have not been available to golfers.
Yeah, it's actually 20% toe hang with
there you
the
go. 20 degrees. Yeah.
The fancy neck on it. And this is something that I think people don't get to recognize. It is becoming more exposed, I think, nowadays, as you mentioned, with the tour usage. There was a time when mallets, it seemed like almost exclusively for that face balance, straight back, straight through type of stroke.
Yep.
And you have these guys using half moon shapes trying to use a mallet, and they just can't get the putter right. They're pulling it, they're pushing it. What they don't realize is, well, that you're used to opening your face a ton,
right?
and now it doesn't open at all,
right?
As you take your stroke, like that is a significant change that you need to accommodate by making this shift. And that's something that I've actually gone in a very different direction with. I realized that as much as I love the blade shape, I prefer an almost face balance profile. So now I have necks that sort of support that.
Yeah.
And work kind of counter to what those like 45 degree blades would force me to do.
You were always a long neck guy though. So, I mean, it's like that was sort of the gateway drug to the face balance mallet. But
it's fun to see it. And I think that there is a level of disservice that exists when shapes only have a certain style of neck on it.
Yeah.
And not to say that I expect them all to be, you know, all options available, but it's hard because I think when you see a familiar shape or a similar shape and you make an assumption based purely on one shape from one manufacturer, you don't realize that is actually a very specific and particular experience that you get from that, depending on what the neck style is, what the weighting is.
That's right.
How do you navigate away from that? How do you encourage people to say, don't give up on a neck just because you tried it once, or don't give up on a head shape just because you tried it once,
right,
from a visual perspective, and now you think it's just not for you?
Yeah. So let's talk it like Miami, right? Mm-hmm. So Miami with an H1 hosel, that one is, the CG is a little bit more than an inch back in depth, versus say a Charleston, which also comes with an H1 hosel, but that CG is much closer to the face. So that one, the torque profile or the rotational value of a Charleston, it's going to want to rotate more, right? So if the way you swing a putter has more rotation, that one's going to feel pretty comfortable to you. And Miami, might feel like it lags behind and your miss might be further to the right. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so much of this, as we put a line together, Dan, is making sure that we have these profiles, you know, that will really fit a variety of different golfers. Right. And then on top of it, it's like, you have to take all of these options that we have, hopefully not get too complex here, but really try to, look at a golfer and say, do you want us to help you find a putter that corrects something in your stroke? Or do you want us to really try to find a putter that complements something in your stroke?
Mm. And I think that's such an underrated perspective. I feel like too many times you get a putter in someone's hands, and I've experienced this myself. The putter is 100% working against what my neutral, natural stroke is, which I don't think I have a bad putting stroke. It just sort of fits into a certain realm of benefit when I have a different type of putter head in my hands.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll let you expand on that, but I really wanted to jump in and say, I really identify with what you're saying.
Yeah. Thank you. So, Lab has just exploded onto the scene. Right. And I think for lots of good reason, but the profile of a putter like that can be really good for some, but it's just part of the spectrum, if you will, right, on what that wants to do. So if you're somebody that definitely has a lot of rotation in your stroke, and that's something that works well for you, which we can identify, if that works well for you, that's probably not going to be the best solution for you, right? If that's something that you really want to try to tone down, and are committed to changing, in some cases pretty dramatically, then that's probably a very good option for you. So we like to make sure that we have different options available for golfers, whether it's corrective or complementary.
Let me ask you an off the wall question. Are you good for it? Do you think there's a level of benefit to trying to market a putter that is so different from what you're used to looking at? It allows people to overlook a significant change in how they would go about putting.
Yeah, I do. I think that's kind of the magic. And I think, you know, I'm going to really date myself, but, you know, in the early 80s, when I went to work for this tiny little near bankrupt company called TaylorMade, selling a metalwood, right? Part of the thing that was the magic of the metalwood is that it didn't look like everything else, and it didn't sound like anything else, and it performed unlike anything else. So I think that's part of creating a hot product for sure. Right. I think what golfers need to be careful of is, you know, it's a way. There is a way to putt. Face balance is a way to putt. Something with a lot of toe hang is a way to putt. Something with none is, you know, so which one is right for you? That's, you know, you got to try them.
Yeah. I want to spend a bit more time talking about 2025 lineup. Yep. Because I think it is really robust. Can you share with the group, is there a putter head or two that you're super excited to have in the lineup? I know you wouldn't release anything you're not proud of, but are there a couple of heads you're just really excited for golfers to try?
Well, when you look at Carlsbad, you know, most people don't really understand our relationship with Odyssey and Callaway. So we do some collaborative work. And the reason why you haven't seen, because that's our version of, you know, one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic putter of all time, the two ball, right? And the reason why you don't see other companies doing a two ball is because legally they can't, right? Well, legally we could and did a collaboration with them. And so when you see that putter and what we did to create an all milled version of that putter, I think it's pretty cool. So that one's got inertia, very unlike a typical one, much higher. It's got a very low profile. The feel on that putter is amazing. And I think it just really looks cool. And that's going to come with two different necks. So I think that one is going to be a really interesting one for a lot of golfers. And And I can't wait to see the feedback that we get from that when people get a chance to see it. And then, you know, Alcatraz was a massive hit for us last year. And we thought Alcatraz Mini, which is more like our old Seattle.
Yeah.
Was really sort of the inspiration for that. Which Alcatraz is, you know, people think, well, that's just a jailbird. It was really more off of a Seattle and how we could make a Seattle bigger. And then Alcatraz Mini is how could we make a Seattle better, right? So that one I think is going to be a pretty cool one. So I think the Mallet lineup is awesome. And then we did a brand new blade for us called Hollywood, which is a very, very modern take on a San Diego, which I think is pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited to see the feedback specifically from TH peers who have followed the brand in its different iterations. It'll be a lot of fun to see how they respond to it, and especially when they get them in hand and start rolling them. I am always fascinated by sound and feedback. I think people are lying if they say they don't have a preference. There is definitely turnoffs for me in that realm. And it's sort of a make or break. I think that's what really drew me into Toulon originally, was the overall intent to get that sound in a place that I wanted it to be with those milling marks. So, you know, I'm excited for that specifically. And we'll have a thread on THP to talk about the new lineup. I hope people come in and share their perspective and what they're excited to hit, so you guys can come in and be entertained by our madness. I do want to know, as we wrap up the show today, what's coming up in 2025. Other than that, it sounds like you've got the garage sneaking up on everyone, which I'm holding you to 100%. But additionally to that, with something like the garage, I have to assume the next best thing for that would be a studio where people can come and really refine what they desire in a putter head. What's going on there?
Yeah. So we got lucky this summer. The suite that's right next to the two that we opened up with became available. So we asked Kathy, my wife, who's handles all of the back office work for us, to move into an old office. And we blew a wall out into this new space, which is, I'd say now we're about, I'll give us a 80% done. Okay. So I'm in the new suite right now in my office. It turned out great. Toru Kamatari, who runs all of our Asian business and is just doing a magnificent job, he's in one of the other offices. And then the rest of it is going to be an incredible showroom, but it opens up to really the crown jewel, which is our new putter fitting studio, which I'd say now is, we're waiting on just a couple of pieces of equipment. We had some tour players through this week, which was sort of our first shot at, you know, how does all of this work? And we learned a lot. We'll move a few cameras. So it's a full articulating green with a 6-camera system that's also got GC Quad, the latest Quintic. I'm missing other technology, but and the overhead projection. So when we move the green, it projects onto the green the new start lines and brakes. And I mean, it's awesome. So we happen to be here in Carlsbad. So our putting studio, I just told the people we worked with, I want this to be the one people talk about, which, you know, there's this guy named Scotty Cameron's got a pretty nice spot here. So TaylorMade's got a nice one. Callaway's got a nice one. We want this to be the best of the best. What's really cool about it is after we fit somebody for a putter here, we open a door and we go right back onto our production floor and they can come right back with us as we build their putter. So that part I think is really cool. And as high tech as it is, you know, our building is, and our vibe as a brand is we want to get to know our customers and spend time with them. And as we're back there building it, our new shop dog Ranger is probably going to be running around chasing a tennis ball and doing all those things. But we're proud of it. I think it's going to be amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then you and Tony and Preston can have a putting battle to see who actually has to go build the putter that just got purchased.
And then we've added some personnel. So John Alangi joined our company. Cool. From Mitsubishi. He and Preston worked together there. And John was actually Preston's boss. And Preston said, I don't care what you pay him. I just want him to report to me. so we just have such a cool team. And we're just really lucky, Dan, to be able to do something that we truly love. So it's pretty cool.
It sounds amazing. It sounds like a place that people will want to go.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what comes of that for you gents.
Yeah.
Let me know from a small batch perspective, are things changing there in any sort of way? Are new ideas coming quickly? What can we anticipate?
Yeah. So right now we have a very full schedule and calendar for small batch. And it's doing unbelievably well. So what's most important to us is the people that acquire one, they just, the notes we get from them is amazing. So that's nice validation. So that's really cool. So you'll start to see, not more of them. And if anything, we'll probably over time reduce the number of small batches that we're doing. And we're going to be doing a few more sort of limited edition drops that I think will be, you know, you'll start to see that the accessibility of those will be a little higher. Like I said, we're not making thousands of anything. So when I say they might become a little bit more accessible, instead of making 75 pieces, we might make 150, right? And price them a little bit differently. So we're working through things like that. But Mark King used to always tell me when he was my boss at TaylorMade, he says, you guys keep going. I'll let you know when we have too many good ideas. So here we've got lots of good ideas, and now we've just got to find the right points in the schedule and calendar to really introduce them. So our business model is really simple. It's six words: always new, always cool, and always rare. So we'll never make a lot of anything. We think we know how to make really cool stuff. Ultimately, we're not the judge. You are. And we're just not going to make very many of them. That's all. So and hopefully that resonates with golfers. So far it has.
I think it does. And I want to add one question to that piece of it. I know your answer is going to primarily focus around family, but I really want people to know, why does this matter so much to you?
This could be hard for me. There's only so much time, right? And the kids really like being here, and this isn't just my dream, it's theirs too. And it has a chance to last a long, long time.
You know, I'll let you leave it there, because I knew how much this meant to you from the family side of things. And I think the more people understand that, the more people will recognize that you're doing more than just making putters there.
Thanks.
You're telling a wonderful story with your name on it, with your son's name on it. That's part of what I love every time I get an email from you guys. I know it's all meant to matter to the people who it's sent to the people who buy your putters. If someone can take one thing away from this, it's that this is the legacy of Toulon, not beyond the great stuff you guys are doing and the things you force into my left ear versus my right. Those are the things I'll remember. But you know, long story short, I think people really, really need to recognize this as a family component, and that, you know, customer service matters. Yes. And I think when you have this sort of emotional investment into it, people can know what they expect when they buy one of your putters.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
It's a beautiful thing.
Thanks, bud.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a heck of a show. I'm so excited. I'm not a Malachi. You know I'm not.
That's a tough deck for you to look at then.
I'm scrolling through this deck just giggling because I know that this is going to get a lot of golfers really excited for 2025. Yeah. I think visually you pick the right color in blue.
Yeah.
We all know that's the color. So different versions of blue each year is great. But they look fantastic, my friend. And I can see the benefits of small batch showing signs of value in your full release, which is exciting, not just because it's turned out great, but because 2026, I'm going to like really dive into every small batch release this year thinking, all right, what's coming in 2026 from all these ideas. So that's one thing I'm really excited about. I want to give you one last chance for the folks out there to share any thoughts or feedbacks or question for me as we get ready for your 25 release.
Yeah. Well, I would say this. One, I hope you, when you see it, I hope it resonates, right? And that doesn't mean I hope you buy a putter. I actually do hope you buy a putter, but if you don't, I'm good. I just hope you can see and feel the obsession, I guess, in the product line. And hopefully there'll be something there that you look at that really does resonate to you as a golfer, right? I hope we all get a chance to get out and play as much as we possibly can.
That sounds great. I love that.
That would be awesome. So anyways, love what you guys do.
Thanks, man. One quick final question. What putter is in the bag for you this year?
Well, I'll tell you, it's, I've started putting in the middle of the season with a Pinehurst.
Okay.
In fact, my partner at the club that we play at in all the club events is Mark King, who's a wonderful player. Mark's a 5-time club champion. Then people would tease us because you know how the guys show up in like the member and they got the same outfit on. We don't ever wear the same outfit, but we have the exact same putters, which could be worse, right? So we both are putting with this Pinehurst. And I just, when the very first prototypes were done, and I never thought this would be anything that I would like, right? We did it as sort of an ode to Pinehurst and Payne Stewart and the Seymour putter that he won with, right? That was our inspiration for it. But it was just like, oh my God. And since that moment, all of these new designs and creations have come to life. And I love every one of them. And I can't get rid of that Pinehurst. I'm still using it. I'll switch here soon because we have a new Las Vegas with a flow neck that is looking very, very nice to me. And so I'll probably switch to that. But I don't know. Who knows?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see what happens this year. Let's get a few more releases in our books, and maybe I can steal another hour from you to talk more about how things have changed later on in the year. For you folks out there, go check out Toulon Putters. It's a wonderful family story from a guy who is truly one of the titans in putters. Oh. So please go check them out. And if you are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Tell someone they're good, especially tell someone they're good at putting. And if they're using an old putter, tell them they suck at putting and they need a Toulon.
Nobody should suck at putting. That's on you if you do.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, everybody. Back here in class at Shaft University. I'm your instructor, Don Brown. Today's question is about the feel difference between step shaft and straight taper shafts. And really, the answer doesn't have anything to do with whether the shaft is stepped or a straight taper. It comes down to how we transition those different geometries. So if you take a straight taper shaft and we put steps in it, you would see it breaks down the same way a step shaft does. And for example, we've got our Project X Red and our Project X Original in blue. Both straight taper shafts are going to have completely different feel. So it has nothing to do really with whether it's stepped or straight taper.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.